All right, you're listening to Bon Appetit Foodcast. I'm Adam Rappaport. On this week's episode, summer's last jam. Labor Day weekend coming up, so I got together with Andrew Knowlton, our deputy editor, and Carl Lally Music, food director, to talk about the best things we cooked and ate all summer long, from grilled lobster to spicy lamb ribs to pesto of every variety. All sorts of great tips and recipes and advice from Carla and Andrew. So, hey man, only a few days of summer left. Let's do this thing. Carla, Andrew, we are recording this podcast on August 25th, yep. Which means there are only two more weekends unofficially left in summer.
Make them count.
That's not depressing to me because there's a few more days to grill out.
You know what? Also, September is gorgeous in New York. September is the best month in New York where we all live.
Yeah.
And you also can go, the thing, the unheraldedness, if that's a word, of September.
It's not.
It's not. But it's probably the best month at the green market still. You go to the farmer's market, the tomatoes, the corn, that's like when they're in full swing here.
It is what I like to refer to as the shoulder month. It's the harvest time. And you've got your high summer, but you've also got the beginning of the fall. And depending on your own constitutional makeup, you could be really psyched about that or have a little bit of a, it's a little hard. When I see the new crop apples, I'm not going to lie. It's like, it sometimes is a little too soon.
But if you live in the South, it's where second season starts because it gets too hot in June and July. And then you get that second wave of produce in September.
So what comes up in
tomatoes, you get your second tomato season.
Second tomatoes.
It's basically mimicking if you live in New England, the Northeast, this is your harvest time.
So you
right
get
now.
First tomatoes in like June, and then you go, oh wow.
May, June, and then it goes and then dark, and then it comes back.
Nightshade.
It's amazing.
I was talking to a chef the other day, and he was saying the reality of the harvest in the Northeast is that tomatoes don't really come into. I didn't have my first really good tomato until last week, probably.
Yeah.
In mid-August. And September is when they're the best, but yet at that point, and people come to restaurants, he's like, yeah, everyone wants like pumpkin, you know, ravioli in September. Like, but that's like when you really should be serving.
I feel like when
stuff.
Football starts, that's you don't want a tomato sandwich anymore.
No.
So this is what we're doing this podcast. Summer's the last jam. We are talking about the best things we each cooked all summer. Maybe some new entries into your personal canons. Carla, are you one of those persons who does the green beans and potatoes in your pesto?
I know it's the double carb pasta dish, but it's delicious and it's classic. It's a classic Italian thing. I think it's Genovese.
I want to say it is. What's the technique in terms of boiling the potatoes, the pasta, the green? What's the timing on all that?
I mean, usually what I like to do is boil the potatoes in the pasta water, right? Take them out.
So they're done.
They're done.
And are you using like little baby new potatoes?
That's the thing. Like there are those really nice baby potatoes right now. Yeah. I just saw them the other day, actually, Union Square Farmers Market. And then cooking those through, taking them out, and then generally I'll put the green beans in at the end of the pasta cooking time. So like the potatoes come out, the pasta goes in,
heavily salted water.
Heavily. Make it rain. Seawater, you know? And then at the end of that, taking your green beans, which if you have the little nice filet beans, you know, those are in the market right now. Mm-hmm. They're kind of like haricot vert. They're very thin. If you got a green bean or a wax bean, which are a little thicker, you might want to cut them into bite-sized pieces and then throw that in.
While the pasta's still in there?
While the pasta's going. And I do like the green beans. Like normally if I was just going to snack on green beans, I would want a little crunch left. But for the pasta, you want kind of al dente, but the same texture as the pasta, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. So a little bit longer cooked. And then dump everything out, save some of the pasta water. And I like to loosen, like put the pesto in the serving bowl and loosen it up with the pasta cooking liquid.
And this is something you do room temperature? Do you eat it room temperature as
well? I would, but it's pretty, it's hot. It's like carbonara, the way you like finish the sauce off heat.
Right.
You know?
It sounds like a good picnic pasta,
sure,
too.
Sure, totally. You know? Delicious.
I love cold potatoes, cold green beans with cold pasta.
But you don't have to put the potato in. That's right. But it's one of those things. Like, sometimes we like to put breadcrumbs on our pasta. Mm. So it's, you know, double carbing is not necessary.
Well, no, because I would say with some of my pastas that I've been doing this summer is whatever beans I have, whether they're garbanzo beans or just cannellini beans, is just adding some of that at the last minute just to kind of.
Oh, at the last minute. Interesting. Yeah, just Claire Saffitz does.
So you have some already cooked beans in your fridge, you mean?
No, I just have them in the can.
Like, well, the
canned beans. And I just literally, when the pasta's, when I'm kind of glossing the pasta up with whatever sauce,
like
I
a
just,
spoonful of beans.
A spoonful of beans in there just to give a little bit more. What?
So not even heated up.
Not even heated
up.
It kind of does it anyway. With your pestos, have you been mixing it up with all the different herbs? It's not just basil and pine nuts. You can, any kind of formula.
Totes. I was at a friend's house in Montauk a couple weeks ago, and I had basil, I had parsley, I had some baby, like a nice tender baby kale, everything from Balsam Farms out in Amagansett, which is the greatest place. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Balsam Farms. Mm-hmm. And just put all of them together. I didn't even have pine nuts. We used almonds.
Do you, when you say put all of them together, because I'm curious about the you said, you say kale or leeks? What did you just say?
Kale.
Kale, which is a sturdy green. Do you put that in like a Vitamix or what do you?
Yeah. Amazingly, the house that she was staying at had a Vitamix. I bring my Vitamix, so that's like my safety net. I do, because we make a lot of smoothies. We bring smoothies to the beach too. But it's great for pesto. So I like pulse the Parmesan in the Vitamix, add one or two cloves of raw garlic, a handful. I toasted the nuts.
I do that also.
Going for that. Toasted some almonds, put that in there. And then I just roughly chopped all the herbs up together and put them in and blended it up. A lot of olive oil, a lot of parm. Yeah. It was really good.
I usually do it with my southern roots, get young collard greens and then pecans sticking
with
it.
I wanted pecans and I couldn't find my pecans.
And then we have this good Georgia tome cheese.
Uh-huh.
And it's a goat cheese, a semi-firm goat cheese, and so you get, it's basically a Georgia.
Is it Gouda-ish?
Georgia, yeah, and it's got a little bit more texture to the pesto, but it's like a Georgia pesto, and just toss that and cold too. It's really,
I
good
think
cold.
What's cool about pesto, if you're not a experienced cook like Carl Lally, music food director, Bon Appetit.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, it is just a formula. You have your nuts, whether it's pine nuts or almonds or walnuts. You have like some green thing, as you just mentioned, a bunch of different herbs. And it doesn't have to be Parmesan, but I like Parmesan. And then you have your olive oil. And it's like any combination thereof till it's creamy and delicious and bright. And
one of my house guests put a vegan in the house, was just putting nutritional yeast into their pesto.
I made a Caesar salad the other night. We had leftover Caesar dressing from our Hail Caesar story, which is great. It's in the house a lot. And I just was too lazy, honestly, to get out the parm. This is
to
like
shred parm.
I was too lazy. It was like in the baggie and wrap. I was just like, I don't feel like it. So I just put nutritional yeast over the whole thing.
I also feel like that's the title of like Andrew Knowlton's third book, A Vegan in the House. What am I?
Andrew Knowlton mystery.
I thought it was going to be too lazy to grate parm. Yeah. The Andrew Knowlton story. No, that would be mine.
Andrew, you visit your parents a lot in Maine, the great state of Maine up there. Known for its lobsters. I'm not a huge lobster guy, but that also might be because I honestly don't know. I've never cooked lobster. I did it once on the grill with my friend Rue, and it was of course too dark by the time we were grilling. Right. And then half the lobsters were incredibly underdone in that weird, like translucent.
Yeah.
And then
you don't want that.
Half of them were overcooked and rubbery. And I was like, it was just.
If only you had had a headlamp.
I know. I need a headlamp. So what's your, when you're up in Maine, what's your preferred treatment?
Well, definitely I go for soft shell.
I was going to say, can we talk shell about lobsters, soft shell
which
and
is
hard
not,
shell?
Soft shell is not like a crab soft shell. You don't eat the shell. Mm-hmm. It's after the lobsters have molted and they're getting their new shells. So the meat tends to be sweeter.
But how do you know how do you know when to get these and how do you know
if
you're getting
them? Well, in Maine, it's a summer thing. You're going summer into fall. So right now, you get your soft shells.
Do you have to ask for them, or that's just what you get?
No, they will sell them. Any place that is worth their weight in lobster will say new shell, hard shell. And the new shells usually are more expensive.
Mm. What is the rate these days for lobster per pound?
In Maine, Maine, if you get a decent guy down at the docks, you can get it for probably $4.99 to $5.99 a pound.
I think here it's like between 9 and 12.
Yeah.
Which is not too bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember when lobster was like 20 bucks a pound.
It has gotten cheaper, right?
It has. I mean, not to get political about it, but it is tough for the lobstermen right now. I mean, it should be more expensive than $4.99 a pound.
Right.
Anyway, so I get soft shell. Meat tends to be sweeter. And the fun thing is for the whole crowd is we've never seen somebody end a lobster's life. I put them in the freezer.
You do.
What do you do?
It depends.
Do you feel bad about it?
Sometimes I feel a little bit conflicted about going head first with a living being. But then sometimes I think we're omnivores.
You know,
so I go back and forth.
As long as they don't write angry emails to bonappetit.com, you know.
Then you're okay with it?
I'm okay with it, yeah. Don't tweet at me, lobsters, and like get mad at me. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. But what about the lobster lovers? I usually do, and I'm not being corny, like I actually do this.
Say some words before
I do. I like,
really?
Sometimes I like... Yeah. I read somewhere at some point that, like, if you kind of pet them in between their weird beady insect eyes, that it calms them down. And so I usually, like, give them a little pat. And if one of the kids is with me, like, it's good to say, like, hey, you know, lobster, at least you're not dying in vain. We're going to do something really delicious with
you.
Like you ended up on a good table.
It's like,
I don't know.
It's like lobster grace. You're saying lobster
a little
grace.
Bit. Well, you go on a, like... thank the animal for giving its life
but
to you.
That's the dilemma with lobster. If you're going to eat it, it needs to be alive right before you eat it because that's how good it is. Anyway,
for sure. And so, even like if there's a few hours between when you picked it up and when you're cooking it, you'll notice like, you know, a guy that was super excited in the store can be a little floppy.
Yeah. So we end their life somehow and then you literally put your knife like right in the top of its head and kind of slice it in half. And it's got some goo in there, which you can take out. You can take out the green tamale if you want. I leave it in. It's got a nice texture to it. And my kids usually give me theirs because they do not prefer that. And then I just brush it with a little bit of olive oil, a little bit of salt and pepper if you want. And then you just put it cut side down on a medium grill, direct heat. And it, you know, when the shell turns red, it's done.
Right.
You know, you don't want to overcook it.
So that's the telltale sign?
I mean, lobster takes 2-3 minutes. It's really quick. I mean,
if it's halved like that.
Yeah. If it's halved like that.
And you're doing it uncovered.
The one thing I
do
recommend.
Crack the claws?
I was just about to say that. What you do is you crack the claws just with a backside of a knife or a hammer just to get a little bit of a break in there to let some of that heat get in there a little bit more easy. I don't like the claws anyway. They're chalky to me. Or the tail's the best part. If it's
oh my god, we are opposite.
Really?
Yeah, love the claw.
No, see, it gets too chalky at times. There's something about it. The tail's got a nice texture if it's not overcooked.
Yes, but that's what I often feel like. I get like the overcooked, chewy, like springy.
But it's usually you're getting it in a lobster roll, and it's, you know, somebody's just cooking it to oblivion and then mixing it up with some mayonnaise, you know, or pouring hot butter on. I'm not a lobster roll fan. I do like it out of the shell. And then something that a few years ago we ran an amazing recipe for, kind of a lobster fra diavolo
pasta. Yeah.
So I will take some of that meat and, you know, put it back into the pan. I'll undercook it in the shell and then put a little butter and then add just some chili flake and stuff like that and then toss it with angel hair pasta.
I do the same thing with undercooking a lobster and then taking it out of the shell. But I do the burst tomato sauce and then I throw the lobster meat in at the end.
So you just throw a bunch of really beautiful tomatoes in a pan.
Yeah.
Low
heat. No,
high heat.
Olive oil. Little garlic, but not cut up too small so it doesn't burn. Throw the cherry tomatoes in there. As soon as the skin split, you get a little juices going. Throw the lobster in there, tossy-tossy. That's good with a dollop of pesto, actually.
Yeah, I will say this. Another time I made a pretty good pasta. And again, it was like what's lying around the counter from the green market. Threw a bunch of stuff in a pan and had something. Oh, I have a bit of pesto in the fridge. And a dollop of pesto can sort of change the complexion of so many dishes. It's just that immediate, like, ooh, it kind of livens it up.
I mean, it's one of those things that, like a salsa verde or a chimichurri, you should always have in your kitchen.
It is really concentrated
in the summer months. All right, a question. Now, so when we were preparing for this podcast, you guys sent me some emails. You both mentioned pork shoulder chops, which I think to the average guy like me, I'm like, ooh, I'm going to go buy the really expensive, beautiful rib chops, jacketed in fat from this heritage breed, yada, yada, yada. Talk to me about pork shoulder chops and why are they different?
Well, I think we were talking about two slightly different things. So when Andrew said pork shoulder chops, you're talking about the ones that have the bone in, right?
And no, not necessarily.
Oh, no. Okay. And then you talk about your pork shoulder chops.
So I go for still quality meat, quality pork, but the cheapest cut that I can find and the fattiest. So usually a shoulder chop or something that like nobody else is buying. I go to the butcher shop to get this. So, yeah. But usually it's a shoulder chop. And then I have the butcher slice them almost as thin as he can get them. Not scallopini, but
like a half inch?
I would say, yeah, half inch thick. And I want fat on there. I want, like, some people be like, no, I'm not eating that. But trust me on this. And then I'll get 20 of them.
Thin cut. Right.
And then I will literally pound the crap out of them with a meat tenderizer.
This is just like when you're just cooking for yourself at home?
Yeah.
20 shoulder chops.
And the kids get involved too because they love, and I'll make holes in the meat. I don't care. This is not something to go like delicate with.
That's your scottadito technique too.
It's my scottadito.
Yeah.
I do it with lamb chops as well.
Yep.
But usually pork. And then we were talking about nok chom the other day, which is a dressing, a Vietnamese dressing that has a little bit of sugar, a little bit of fish sauce, a little bit of lime juice.
That's chilies.
Chilies. And then you can kind of customize it if you want with ginger or cilantro. But I actually use that as a little bit of a marinade to get some sugar on there.
Because they're going to cook for such a short amount of time.
And then the highest grill I can, I will throw those little pork chops on there, and it takes a minute, 30 seconds per side.
Do you even turn them? You do.
I do turn them.
You know what's nice about that? Well, two things. I was doing these videos yesterday at Carla's house. Thank you, Carla, for lending us your backyard about gas grills and charcoal grills. And if you're doing something thin like that, like you basically can't use a gas grill because the gas grill is not going to get hot enough. And you end up with those overcooked, not charred, rubbery chops.
It's very disappointing.
You want it ripping hot. And I think what's nice about the nok chom, the fact that it has sugar in there, it accelerates the caramelization process on the chop. So you like, so it's like a minute, total minute and a half maybe.
And then you're done. And then I always have a little bit of rice, short grain rice, Japanese rice. And then I will even chop those chops up for the kids and then literally put a big bowl with steaming hot sushi rice and then put the meat on top and then literally pour the nok chom over top. A little bit of cilantro, maybe some peanuts, some cashews.
Peanuts, yes.
And that is like the perfect summer kind of.
Do you lettuce wrap at that point?
Or you could. Like, no, you could like lettuce wrap. You could do a little psalm if you want, a beau psalm, and put that inside. But that technique is like quick, easy.
Yeah.
Doing that this weekend. What about you, Carl? What's your pork chop?
So my shoulder chop revelation came when I was with Rachel Yang in Seattle, who has a handful of Korean restaurants at this point.
Yes, and in Portland, Oregon, too, now.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, oh, expanding. Well, where we'll be there. Yeah. And she did a gochujang.
Shout out to Feast Portland, the food festival, which is September 14th, 15th, 16th, around
14th
that region.
14th through the 17th.
If you're in Portland or even in the Pacific Northwest, or even if you're not, it's worth coming to. It's kind of the coolest food festival around. It's one of those festivals that you don't have to ask the chefs to come. They want to come.
Totally.
It's like, if you like chefs with tattoos, you will love Feast Portland.
And it's still summer in Portland at that time, too.
Big time.
Yeah. Gorgeous. Yeah. All right, so anyways, back to pork chops.
Okay, so she, I went out there a few years ago, and it was a story about Korean grilling, and she did a technique with boneless pork shoulder. She had the whole shoulder, and it was a gochujang marinade, which is the fermented Korean chili paste that also has miso and some sugar and spice, and it was very simple. It was pretty simple marinade, but what blew my mind was that she cut them. So she just got a boneless pork shoulder, and then she cut them into pretty thick, like an inch and a half thick steaks without really worrying about the grain or the whatever. Mm-hmm. She just cut them into these giant like slabs and then grilled them very high heat for not that long. So it was super juicy inside. And pork shoulder, I guess for me, I was always, you know, thought of as a braising cut or something you had to cook like really for a really long time. And this was, you know, 3-4 minutes on either side. The marinade did help it get really beautiful color. And I was amazed how like juicy and tender it was. So sort of the texture of like strip steak or, you know, somewhere in between a ribeye and strip steak. So there's some chew to it, but it's not like chewy. It's not like skirt steak or flank.
I think that's interesting. And we've talked about this before in the pod, but especially with Korean grilling, and Korean barbecue really appreciates the chewiness, the texture of its various cuts of meat. And I've now started in the last couple of years grilling just boneless short ribs mm-hmm. as steak and then slicing against totally. The grain. You can also do the thing where you have the short ribs, you slice them first. Like, is that kalbi mm-hmm. or bulgogi? Which one do you – I always forget which one you slice for. Anyways, but doing it that way, you can also do brisket.
Brisket and, you know, at that same trip. That was another lesson I learned of, like, do brisket with just – like nothing, like salt. That was it.
When you serve short ribs and brisket,
yeah.
like that to people, it yeah. blows their mind. Because we always think of it as, oh, you got to braise it during the winter and
totally.
So, but yeah. when you have it for the first time, it's like, what cut is this?
Well, because the flavor is like that delicious. So when I do the pork shoulders, I will include. I might not do that marinade, but I always try to do something with like garlic. Maybe it's a little olive oil, but I will put like a pinch of sugar in there and it just helps the caramelization. And the key other thing that you mentioned is like it's fatty and like good yeah, fat, really, you know, yeah. it's sort of basting itself. So delicious.
But if you're doing the brisket, because I have the image of the photo in my head from that story, and it was a gorgeous photo, that the brisket you sliced first
very thinly.
And then grilled it. Yeah.
But with the brisket, the trick, if you're in a store that doesn't have the brisket pre-cut, which mm-hmm. some Asian markets will, or Korean grocery yep. store, they have all those grilling things already set up for mm-hmm. you. But if you are just buying a piece of brisket, the trick is to just freeze it for, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes until it's firm enough, and then it's much easier to thinly slice.
But you're also, are you going with the flat end as opposed to the thicker, fattier end of the brisket?
No, probably? You want the fattier end.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I generally like it. I just didn't know there's
if
so much
more
fat going on
there. If it's cooked thinly enough, then that fat will also render.
The last few times I've cooked out on Long Island, I went to the Eight Hands Farm near me, and they had these lamb ribs. I was like, oh, lamb ribs. Yum. I've read about those in Bon Appetit magazine. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, give me like three of those things. There's four people. It seemed like enough. And I used... riffed on that recipe from BA a couple months ago, years ago, where it has like the ground coriander mm-hmm. and fennel seed, salt, pepper.
Seamus Mullen.
Yeah, I threw yeah. a little sugar in there, and I just chopped up some garlic and ginger, and sort of wrapped each rib rack in foil, put in the oven for 3 hours, just like I would do spare ribs.
So you know, did the best ever BA pork rib technique
exactly.
on the lamb ribs.
Once again, it all comes back to technique. It's like pesto. It's like you can riff on stuff. Like yeah, pork ribs, lamb ribs, basically same difference. Season them. Get them spicy, wrap them up, put them in the oven until they're fall apart tender. And then on the grill, so I grilled them up on a hot grill so they got all crispy on the outside. The recipe in the magazine is like a rhubarb something or other
yeah.
glaze,
yeah.
maple syrup glaze. I'm like, well, I don't have all that. But I did have some honey. So I was
right.
like, so I heated up in a pot some honey with some smashed garlic and chili flakes and then just drizzled that all over these spicy, fragrant ribs.
And they were already tender, so now
oh
you're
God.
Just, like, crisping them.
Yeah, so I crisped them on the – I did the glaze after they were off the grill.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, because the grill, I didn't want to burn them.
They
were hot enough.
They were pretty meaty?
Oh, they were so – I mean, just so yeah. crispy, so – you know, lamb fat is – so it's a really rich
– lamb good, fat.
Yeah. So that was like, wow, I'm definitely making lamb ribs from now on. Not all the time, but – that they're right there with pork ribs. I'm like, if you can find them,
it's hard to find
them.
But
you know,
yeah,
it's a, you're using the exact same. If you ever make, you know, baby backs or spare ribs on your grill, just do the same thing but with lamb. But what I've done the last couple of times I've cooked is like, I feel like 10 years ago, if I was grilling or doing whatever, I would make like roast potato or potato salad or rice. Now I just do vegetable sides.
Yeah,
and it's like I get one good piece of meat in the middle, like pork chops. I'll do like nok cham, slice those up for the table, and then this last time I just. There's, you know, amazing tomatoes finally, just like big heirlooms and sun golds and cherries. Chop those up, oil, basil, salt. And then kind of went old school. I had a beautiful like peach-hued watermelon that I chopped up. I got some feta cheese with that watermelon.
Yeah, totally.
Tossed the feta, the watermelon with some quinoa, which I just made, which I emailed you about like or text you like what's the best way to make quinoa, whatever, which we did like pasta style,
yep.
hot boiling water, hot, but like a big pot of boiling water, put in there until it's almost done, pour it on a sheet tray, let it dry out a bit.
Yeah.
And then just a ton of fresh mint and a shallot vinaigrette. So it was just really nice, like, having a meal where there's, like, tomatoes, there's quinoa and watermelon, and then some ribs. Like, no onion rolls, no hash yeah. browns, no cream spinach. Like, you buy good meat. The meat, it's so satisfying in its sort of unctuousness. And then just a lot of fresh vegetables. When I did pork chops last time with the nok cham, I did bok choy on the side, and then grilled up some zucchini with fresh mint and garlic. And I don't know. It's just it's indulgent. It's satisfying. but it's you don't need to take a nap afterwards.
Totally. I love eating like that because you feel, first of all, like super nourished by that food because it's so fresh and delicious. And then you can eat a lot. It's delicious. And then, but afterwards, so you're like full and satisfied, but you don't feel ill.
I think an eye-opening moment for me was actually Scandinavia, going to Norway or going to Copenhagen. And when they were going through that whole like charring every vegetable they could get their hands on, almost like blackening, it looked burnt. And I started just grilling my vegetables like that, no matter if it was green beans or the allium family or fairy tale eggplant or whatever it was, just charring it. And then, like you said,
when you say it, are you talking on the grill or on a cast iron?
Oh, no, always on the grill. I would have either, those kind of gimmicky little vegetable baskets that you can buy, or there's actually a little aluminum, I don't know if it's aluminum, but little sheets that you just put onto the grill so that the little eggplant or the green beans don't fall through the grates.
Right.
And that's just something you can do after you take your meat off, whatever you're cooking and it's resting, you just throw those vegetables on there. And then, like you said, Adam, whether you have a shallot vinaigrette or you just mix a little bit of tahini with some water and some lime juice or lemon juice, and you drizzle that over whatever charred vegetable you have.
You mentioned the allium family. I'm a big fan of the allium family. What sort of stuff are you throwing
on
there?
Spring garlic or just baby leeks. Any good onion that you can find, just grill that. Onions have such that the sugars just concentrate when you put them on the grill.
What I like to do, and I always, anytime I'm at the farm stand, I always just grab a big bunch of good scallions. And the kind you get at a farm stand, they're big and tall and you can like smell them. And I will do what Andrew did. I'll char them on the grill so they're charred on the outside but still almost like molten on the inside, And then I will just chop them up and then I'll toss those into like a rice salad or a farro salad or quinoa or whatever.
Totally.
And you get that char and super sweetness at the same time.
There's another crossover vegetable. We're talking about starches and potatoes and not having them and feeling good. So one of those for me that kind of does double duty is corn. Like corn is a starch and a veg and is also, when it's in season, is like, it's just, there's nothing like it. It's the best. And the way that I've been cooking it lately, this is a Karolali technique, actually. But I just started doing this, and then I asked her how she does her corn. And she was like, told me, and it was the exact same way. I was like, it's just a fusion of our genetic material. So bringing a pot of water, but not, you know how like when you're boiling corn, you just have to have so much because of the height of the thing.
You need a big pot.
It's like a lot of water and it takes forever. So I'm not doing that anymore. I'm bringing like 3 or 4 inches of water up to a boil.
Dude, I did this last time, but only because like Simone, that's my wife, put like a big, like made like a big skillet or something on and filled up with a couple inches of water. And I'm like, well, I guess
this
that'll
is
work.
What I'm going to do.
Yeah. So
bring it up to a boil, definitely heavily salt it. Shuck the corn. Last year I was all about grilling it with the husks on. Now I'm like shucking and getting it in there and then putting it in, covering it, turning off the heat and letting it sit for, depending on the size of them, 4 to 6, 7 minutes. And I'm actually over the like crunchy corn vibes, like barely cooked and still crunchy. And this summer I'm kind of into like not overcooked, but like almost
soft,
cream corn is... delicious. So we've been really embracing.
Wait,
like,
are you eating that off the cob or are you making it in salads?
No, I'm just like a little like changing that technique, cooking it a little bit longer. You have to have amazing corn and then really just getting into the like put the ear of corn on the stick of butter.
No, I do not approve of that.
Why?
The butter looks so messy. And then if you're like the fourth person to go, the butter's already.
Well, that's why the stick of butter has to actually be like cool. Then you can see the butter. It's like watching hot dogs rotating on those little round griddle things. Like you just churning. And it's like you can see the butter going through the kernels. Ugh,
before
so
we
good.
Get to our lightning round, and there will be a lightning round.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know.
You were talking about cold brew with sweetened condensed milk.
Why not? It's like taking a Vietnamese iced coffee concept, but just using strong cold brew. Actually, if you can get Grady's cold brew, which is now sold in all different kinds of sizes, and they also make this Grady's, they're like giant coffee tea sachets, right? And they make it very easy for you to brew cold brew at home where you're just putting it in a jar of cold water, cold brew, sweetened condensed milk, put them together, put them in a cocktail shaker, crack some ice in there, shaky, wow. shaky. So it's like a shakerado, but mm-hmm. it's a little bit sweet and it's cold yeah. and it is.
How sweet is sweetened condensed milk?
Very, very, very
so
sweet.
Sickeningly sweet. It looks sweet. Like syrup.
But so it's never going to look the same light color of your iced coffee with milk
yeah.
because if you put that much in, it would actually be, it would just be gross.
It'll kill you.
It'll kill you. But yeah, maybe, I don't know, a couple teaspoons of sweetened condensed milk for 12 ounces of coffee. Shake it all around. Pour it over more ice.
Grady.
Delicious.
Grady himself actually used to be a fact checker at GQ when I worked there.
No way.
And he was like, I'm going to go start this iced coffee thing. I'm like, good luck with that, Grady.
He worked at Bon Appetit, too.
When was he at Bon App?
Like, right when we relaunched the magazine, he was a research guy here too.
Yeah. Really?
And he was just starting Grady's Coffee.
And he literally like biked around the city with jars of, well, now he's all over and he's in all the Whole Foods and all over the country.
Now he owns Bon Appetit, actually.
Yeah. You can get it for cheap these days. No, I'm a fan. I like Grady's Coffee because, it's really dark. I like a concentrated cold brew. When I get a cold brew that's like looks like iced tea, it just depresses me. It's also interesting because he also includes chicory in his blend, which is what you get down at Cafe Du Monde in New Orleans and that around those parts. And it has that chocolatey flavor. Although chicory does not have caffeine, correct? So if you blend,
it
sort of lessens the caffeine content in your coffee. Well, it's good for some of us.
Yeah. But for you guys, is iced coffee a year-round thing? It's not just summertime anymore.
I can't believe you're asking me that question.
For me, it's seasonal. It's 100% very seasonal for me.
For you, it's year-round.
I have two words for you, 365-7. No, wait, 364, 27, 24, 365. 365 days, seven
you don't
days
drink,
a week,
you don't drink
whatever that
drip
saying is.
Coffee, do you? You don't just drink coffee.
I rarely drink drip coffee.
You drink espresso or iced coffee.
Yeah.
Or iced espresso.
Yeah, or iced espresso.
So when you go to a diner, like a real diner, what are you drinking?
How often do I go to real diners?
Well, now, I don't know. But if you went to a roadside place, like you're not getting the
I'll tell you when I drink regular drip coffee. Like, yeah, if I'm just at... I mean, I had some the other day when I was somewhere. I was like, yeah, it's fine. And then, or room service. All right, guys, this has been awesome. Summer's the last jam. We got two weekends left. But before you go, we are doing the lightning round. Mm. All right?
I'm ready.
I've never been a part of a lightning round.
Well, you're about to be.
I don't know if I have either. I've administered lightning rounds.
All right, so this is summer themed, obviously. Flip-flops or Birkenstocks?
Flip-flops.
Obviously, Birkenstocks.
Oh, God,
flip-flops hurt my little toe crease. Stop.
All right, so Nona, I told you, I looked the other day, I was like, oh, maybe I want to get some of those cool, like, matte black Birkenstocks as, like, my office slippers of sorts, because they look really comfortable. I could wear them in the summertime. They're $270.
Yeah, they're more expensive than Air Jordans.
The regular ones are not that much. The regular ones with the cork whatever sole are, like, half
Had my special... leather braided woven Birkenstocks sent from Germany because I couldn't find them anywhere else and like had to do a customs form and a whole thing and it was worth it.
Give me a $10 pair of sandals.
I'm an Adidas slide guy. I just like the slides. I know I'm like a college athlete sort of thing, but I like,
you know
what I really love? Going to get coffee in the morning, wearing my slides with socks.
Oh, yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
It's like I'm on the water polo team.
I have many pairs of Birkenstocks.
Okay. Maryland blue crabs or Maine lobster?
Maryland blue crabs.
Wow, it says the Maine guy.
Yeah.
Lobster.
You use like a crab boil sort of thing?
I'm a crab guy. If there's a crab and a lobster at a bar, I'm going to talk to the crab.
All right. Strawberry shortcake bar or chocolate eclair bar?
Oh, we've talked about this. Chocolate eclair bar. Yeah, this is a good humor question.
Really?
But chocolate eclair bar versus toasted almond.
I like the strawberry shortcake bar personally.
Well,
although that secret chocolate in the middle of the chocolate eclair bar is kind of a great surprise.
I would never get the strawberry shortcake bar, and I would also never get strawberry ice cream if given a choice.
I don't like fake strawberries. I think.
All right, can I say this though? If you ever get like at a restaurant or page, whatever, but good actual homemade strawberry ice cream is pretty amazing.
Sure,
when it's done.
Yeah, when it's done. Yes,
it's just not my first choice.
All right, grilled burger or grilled dog?
Oh, burger.
It has to be grilled.
Yeah, I'm talking on the grill.
I'm going to say hot dog. I'm not a fan of grilled burgers.
What if, can it be grilled in a skillet on the grill?
No, we're not talking smash burgers. Yeah. What do you put on your dog?
Just yellow mustard.
Then I'm switching to dogs too.
So, okay. Yeah. I said on the grill. You know what's also really good on a hot dog, Carla?
Tell me.
Avocado.
Ew.
Avocado. No, bear with me because I know you vetoed me on this hot dog story 2 years ago.
It was like an entire army of people who tried it.
Coleslaw, avocado, a little drizzle of like mustard.
You know what you should put on there?
On a charred dog. You get the charred of the char of the dog, the creaminess of the
mustard
slaw.
Mustard with avocado?
And the butteriness of the avocado. Well, you put the mustard on the coleslaw part.
Why don't you just put some cold like pads of butter on there?
Anyways, all right, moving on in the lightning round. Beach or pool?
Oh, biatch.
Yeah, beach all the way.
Pool all the way. I hate sand. Don't like, I don't like, it's too sunny. I don't like the sand. I don't like eating in the sand. Like kids, like you, no matter how many times, if you have young kids, how many times you tell them to not walk on the beach blanket when they get out of the water with sandy feet, they will still walk right across the beach.
Do you
beach
know
blanket.
What we do? We this summer we started, if you walk across the towel while it's on the beach, a golden retriever puppy dies.
Oh,
that's
wow.
what we tell them, and it works. And they, and then sometimes my youngest Sig will step on it and be like, "Oh no,
oh,
a
no.
golden retriever puppy just died."
Oh, no.
Anyway, you should try it if you have kids. It works.
You know what I do with my kids? I don't tell them not to walk on towels with sandy feet because it is a pointless exercise. It's just like, yeah. why even bother? Bring just, some just, chairs.
Just
to
don't
the beach.
Get sand in the chips in the bag of chips.
That is
I get so
no.
angry.
That's what
worst.
Happens though. When you go to the beach. That's what happens. I like the beach at like 9 a.m. and I like the beach at like 5:30 p.m. Anytime in between, it's too hot and too sandy.
You are the oldest 40-year-old I know.
I wish I was 40. Okay, this is not legal in the great state of New York, but bottle rocket or Roman candle?
Oh, Roman candle all the way. Roman candle, I grew up with Roman candle wars. I mean, we would literally point them at each other. And my parents, I think, watched. They didn't care. Yeah. You're holding up but I will say taking bottle rockets, lighting them, and then throwing them up in the air is one of life's great
See,
pleasures.
That's great, because if you use it as a bottle rocket, you're sort of pointing them. But when you throw them in the air, you don't know which way they're going to go.
No, you don't.
Because once they take off,
no, you don't.
They could be pointing in any direction.
Yeah, they're good out of Coke bottles, too. You put them in Coke
bottles. Yeah, but in a Coke bottle, you know the trajectory,
yes,
more
true.
Or less.
But we would do that. We would hold the Coke bottle just because it was a little bit safer.
Okay.
So you can light it in the Coke bottle.
For the record, we at Bon Appetit don't condone any of this behavior.
Well, but in Connecticut, you can have fireworks just play. So we saved up a stash from 4th of July, and we're going to have a big fireworks show for Labor Day.
In the summer.
On the lawn. Try not to burn
Carla, I've
down.
Done a version of this question with you, but not Knowlton. Hard-packed or soft-serve?
I can't believe you have to think about it.
I'm soft-serve.
What?
Yeah.
I feel like I don't
Wait,
even
you don't
know
like soft
you.
Serve?
It's not that
During
I don't,
the summer?
It's not that I don't like it. I prefer hard pack.
No, I like soft. And if it has magic shell on it, even better.
Yeah, I will do, I'm going to kind of split hairs. I don't know, so I'm going to.
You can't. If, you have to choose
no,
one or the
I know.
Other. That's
I'm,
the whole
okay,
thing
I'm just
with
saying,
the lightning
I'm going to explain this. At home on the sofa while watching like Billions or something, I'm eating like out of a pint of like McConnell's double
well, you
chip.
You can't get soft
Yeah,
serve.
Because
well,
no, you no, don't
no,
have
but,
a soft
well,
serve
no,
machine
I know.
In your house.
Well, hold on. Let me finish. I'm
but
just
if
saying.
If you hear that, Mr. Softy.
When it's summertime and I'm out and I go to an ice cream place, and a lot of the ice cream places, you have the option between hard pack or soft serve. I will always go soft serve.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, you know what? I'm at an ice cream place. I'm getting soft serve because I can get hard pack any other time of year at home. Right. I can just walk to the corner store and get a pint of Ben and Jerry's or whatever.
Isn't it wonderful that all humans have different things that they like and that please
twist,
them?
Twist, right? Twist.
Oh, twist always. Yeah. And then always a wafer cone, never a sugar cone.
I don't like a sugar cone, but that's
the
problem.
Wait, the wafer cone, those squat ones that are, you're the only person I know eats those.
No, Carla.
No, I had it backwards. I don't like those.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's like eating wet cardboard.
You know, your mom would always buy those, like in the 70s.
Like
they'd
those.
Buy the box of them, and
the
like
Comet.
And they would buy the ones that have different colors. I'm like, Mom, these still taste like cardboard.
I would
They're
just
terrible.
Eat. I would just eat those. With
oh my god. Okay. All right. Another question: wet, hot American summer or vacation?
Ooh.
Yeah. I grew up with a Christie Brinkley poster on the back of my door, so I'm going vacation all day.
Chevy Chase,
the Griswolds.
Come on, this sandwich tastes.
And
funny.
that show holds up. That movie holds up.
Yes, it does.
Frozen margarita or pina colada?
Oof. How many am I having?
One.
to pina colada. Mm.
I'm going to go, if I'm having one pina colada, if I have more than one, I'll go frozen margarita.
No, the BA's best pina colada recipe for anyone who now wants a pina colada is just impeccable.
What is it exactly?
It's sweet. It's Coco Lopez ice.
What is Coco Lopez?
Sweetened coconut milk.
Okay.
Mixture.
Right? Mixture, yeah. Brad Leone, he wrote this recipe. He developed the recipe, and he says you can use frozen pineapple that you like buy in the bag, but he really wants you to buy pineapple, cut it up, and freeze it. Made a huge difference in the flavor.
All right, so it's cut up pineapple, Coco Lopez, ice.
And rum.
Yeah.
And then he puts a cherry on it, and then there's an optional rum floater. Oh,
right, but I think it's better. A pina colada needs overproof rum, mm-hmm. so stuff that's like the higher the alcohol, the better the flavor, especially when it's frozen like
that. And blended, yeah. Delish.
Yum. And it's like 10:45 right now.
I could totally pound a pina colada right now.
Last question. Mustard or mayo?
Gosh, that's really hard.
You get one of them for the summer. Which one's it going to be?
Yeah, it's got with a tomato. It's got to be mayo for me. It's mayo.
Break then what's on the hot dog?
Yeah, just a tomato sandwich. Yeah.
I find. Listen, I'm an avowed mayo lover. I will eat just mayo on bread straight. But also mayo is multifunctional. Mm-hmm. Mustard, less so. I love mustard. You know, I love mustard on a dog. I love some Dijon with some steak. I love, you know, I'll throw some Dijon in a salad dressing.
Right.
But I don't know if I need it. I got to have mayo.
Yeah.
You're not having a BLT without mayo. That'd be the most depressing thing ever.
Yeah.
But if you're, you don't like corn dogs, do you?
I think they're overrated. Mm. You have two bites and you're like, I'm good.
But you only have, if you go to the carnival or the fair in Maine, you have one corn dog a year.
No, but somewhere I was recently, was it a BA? I can't remember. They did like corn dogs essentially the size of a pig in a blanket.
Right.
And that was perfect.
It was. The ratio was okay.
They got the ratio okay, so it wasn't too much breading, but it was like, oh, a couple of these swabbed in some, you know, deli mustard. And you're like, that was
awesome. You do need mustard though for that.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Carla Lolly Music, Andrew Knowlton, thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of your summer.
Yeah, remember, it's not over yet.
Later, guys.
The Bon Appetit Foodcast is produced by Emma Wertzman and Carrie Polis and edited by Mitra Kaboli. Our theme music is by Valerie and the Gradys, with additional music by Nathaniel Wertzman. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any other episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.